Chapter 28. Footprints in Air. Nynaeve stared in wonder at what lay ahead down the river, the white bridge gleaming in the sun with a milky glow. Another legend, she thought, glancing at the warder and the Aes Sedai riding just ahead of her. Another legend, and they don't even seem to notice. She resolved not to stare where they could see. They'll laugh if they see me gaping like a country bumpkin. The three rode on silently toward the fabled white bridge. Since that morning after Shadar Logoth, when she had found Moiraine and Lan on the bank of the Arenel, there had been little in the way of real conversation between her and the Aes Sedai. There had been talk, of course, but nothing of substance as Nynaeve saw it. Moiraine's attempts to talk her into going to Tar Valon, for instance. Tar Valon. She would go there if need be and take their training, but not for the reasons the Aes Sedai thought. If Moiraine had brought harm to Egwene and the boys. Sometimes, against her will, Nynaeve had found herself thinking of what a wisdom could do with the one power, of what she could do. Whenever she realized what was in her head, though, a flash of anger burned it out. The power was a filthy thing. She would have nothing to do with it, unless she had to. The cursed woman only wanted to talk about taking her to Tar Valon for training. Moiraine would not tell her anything. It was not as if she wanted to know so much. "How do you mean to find them?" she remembered demanding. "As I have told you," Moiraine replied, without bothering to look back at her. "I will know when I am close to the two who have lost their coins." It was not the first time Nynaeve had asked, but the Aes Sedai's voice was like a still pond that refused to ripple, no matter how many stones Nynaeve threw. It made the wisdom's blood boil every time she was exposed to it. Moiraine went on as if she could not feel Nynaeve's eyes on her back. Nynaeve knew she must be able to, she was staring so hard. "The longer it takes, the closer I must come, but I will know. As for the one who still has his token, so long as he has it in his possession, I can follow him across half the world if need be." "And then? What do you plan when you've found them, Aes Sedai?" She did not for a minute believe the Aes Sedai would be so intent on finding them if she did not have plans. "Tar Valon, wisdom." "Tar Valon. Tar Valon. That's all you ever say, and I am becoming—" "Part of the training you will receive in Tar Valon, wisdom, will teach you to control your temper. You can do nothing with the one power when emotion rules your mind." Nynaeve opened her mouth, but the Aes Sedai went right on. "Lan, I must speak with you a moment." The two put their heads together, and Nynaeve was left with a sullen glower that she hated every time she realized it was on her face. It came too often as the Aes Sedai deftly turned her questions off onto another subject, slid easily by her conversational traps, or ignored her shouts until they ended in silence. The scowl made her feel like a girl who had been caught acting the fool by someone in the women's circle. That was a feeling Nynaeve was not used to, and the calm smile on Moiraine's face only made it worse. If only there was some way to get rid of the woman. Lan would be better by himself. A warder should be able to handle what was needed, she told herself hastily, feeling a sudden flush. No other reason, but one meant the other. And yet, Lan made her even more furious than Moiraine. She could not understand how he managed to get under her skin so easily. He rarely said anything, sometimes not a dozen words in a day, and he never took part in any of the discussions with Moiraine. He was often apart from the two women scouting the land, but even when he was there he kept a little to one side, watching them as if watching a duel. Nynaeve wished he would stop. If it was a duel, she had not managed to score once, and Moiraine did not even seem to realize she was in a fight. Nynaeve could have done without his cool blue eyes, without even a silent audience. That had been the way of their journey for the most part, quiet, except when her temper got the best of her, and sometimes when she shouted, the sound of her voice seemed to crash in the silence like breaking glass. The land itself was quiet, as if the world were pausing to catch its breath. The wind moaned in the trees, but all else was still. The wind seemed distant, too, even when it was cutting through the cloak on her back. At first, the silence was restful after everything that had happened. It seemed as if she had not known a moment of quiet since before winter night. By the end of the first day alone with the Aes Sedai and the warder, though, she was looking over her shoulder and fidgeting in her saddle as if she had an itch in the middle of her back where she could not reach. The silence seemed like crystal doomed to shatter, and waiting for the first crack put her teeth on edge. It weighed on Moiraine and Lan, too, as outwardly unperturbable as they were. She soon realized that, beneath their calm surfaces, hour by hour they wound tighter and tighter, like clock springs being forced to the breaking point. Moiraine seemed to listen to things that were not there, and what she heard put a crease in her forehead. Lan watched the forest and the river as if the leafless trees and wide, slow water carried the signs of traps and ambushes waiting ahead. Part of her was glad that she was not the only one who apprehended that poised-on-the-brink feel to the world, but if it affected them, it was real, and another part of her wanted nothing so much as for it to be just her imagination. Something of it tickled the corners of her mind, as when she listened to the wind, but now she knew that that had to do with the one power, and she could not bring herself to embrace those ripples at the edge of thought. "It is nothing," Lan said quietly when she asked. He did not look at her while he spoke. His eyes never ceased their scanning. Then, contradicting what he had just said, he added, "You should go back to your two rivers when we reach Whitebridge and the Camelin Road. It's too dangerous here. Nothing will try to stop you going back, though." It was the longest speech he had made all that day. "She is part of the pattern, Lan," Moiraine said chidingly. Her gaze was elsewhere, too. "It is the Dark One, Nynaeve. The storm has left us, for a time at least." She raised one hand as though feeling the air, then scrubbed it on her dress unconsciously as if she had touched filth. "He is still watching, however," she sighed, "and his gaze is stronger. Not on us, but on the world. How much longer before he is strong enough to—" Nynaeve hunched her shoulders. Suddenly she could almost feel someone staring at her back. It was one explanation she would just as soon the Aes Sedai had not given her. Lan scouted their path down the river, but where before he had chosen the way, now Moiraine did so, as surely as if she followed some unseen track, footprints in air, the scent of memory. Lan only checked the route she intended to see that it was safe. Nynaeve had the feeling that even if he said it was not, Moiraine would insist on it anyway. And he would go, she was sure, straight down the river to— With a start, Nynaeve pulled out of her thoughts. They were at the foot of the White Bridge. The pale arch shone in the sunlight, a milky spider web too delicate to stand, sweeping across the Arenal. The weight of a man would bring it crashing down, much less that of a horse. Surely it would collapse under its own weight any minute. Lan and Moiraine rode unconcernedly ahead, up the gleaming white approach and onto the bridge, hooves ringing, not like steel on glass, but like steel on steel. The surface of the bridge certainly looked as slick as glass, wet glass, but it gave the horses a firm, sure footing. Nynaeve made herself follow, but from the first step she half waited for the entire structure to shatter under them. If lace were made of glass, she thought, it would look like this. It was not until they were almost all the way across that she noted the tarry smell of char thickening the air. In a moment she saw. Around the square at the foot of the White Bridge, piles of blackened timbers, still leaking smoky threads, replaced half a dozen buildings. Men in poorly fitting red uniforms and tarnished armor patrolled the streets, but they marched quickly, as if afraid of finding anything, and they looked over their shoulders as they went. Townspeople, the few who were out, almost ran, shoulders hunched, as though something were chasing them. Lan looked grim, even for him, and people walked wide of the three of them, even the soldiers. The warder sniffed the air and grimaced, growling under his breath. It was no wonder to Nynaeve, with the stink of burn so strong. "The wheel weaves as the wheel wills," Moiraine mumbled. No eye can see the pattern until it is woven. In the next moment she was down off Aldeeb and speaking to townsfolk. She did not ask questions, she gave sympathy, and to Nynaeve's surprise it appeared genuine. People who shied away from Lan, ready to hurry from any stranger, stopped to speak with Moiraine. They appeared startled themselves at what they were doing, but they opened up after a fashion, under Moiraine's clear gaze and soothing voice. The Aes Sedai's eyes seemed to share the people's hurt, to empathize with their confusion, and tongues loosened. They still lied, though, most of them. Some denied there had been any trouble at all. Nothing at all. Moiraine mentioned the burned buildings all around the square. Everything was fine, they insisted, staring past what they did not want to see. One fat fellow spoke with a hollow heartiness, but his cheek twitched at every noise behind him. With a grin that kept slipping, he claimed an overturned lamp had started a fire that spread with the wind before anything could be done. One glance showed Nynaeve that no burned structure stood alongside another. There were almost as many different stories as there were people. Several women lowered their voices conspiratorially. The truth of the matter was there was a man somewhere in the town meddling with the One Power. It was time to have the Aes Sedai in. Pastime was the way they saw it, no matter what the men said about Tar Valon. Let the Red Aja settle matters. One man claimed it had been an attack by bandits, and another said a riot by dark friends.
Those ones going to see the false dragon, you know, he confided darkly. They're all over the place. Dark friends, everyone.
Still others spoke of some kind of trouble. They were vague about exactly what kind, that had come down river on a boat.
We showed them, a narrow-faced man muttered, scrubbing his hands together nervously. Let them keep that kind of thing in the borderlands where it belongs. We went down to the docks and—
He cut off so abruptly his teeth clicked. Without another word, he scurried off, peering back over his shoulder at them as if he thought they might chase him down. The boat had gotten away. That much was clear eventually from others, cutting its moorings and fleeing downriver only the day before while a mob poured onto the docks. Nynaeve wondered if Egwene and the boys had been on board. One woman said that a glee man had been on the boat. If that had been Tom Merrillin. She tried her opinion on Moiraine, that some of the Emmons Fielders might have fled on the boat. The Aes Sedai listened patiently, nodding until she was done. Perhaps, Moiraine said then, but she sounded doubtful. An inn still stood in the square, the common room divided in two by a shoulder-high wall. Moiraine paused as she stepped into the inn, feeling the air with her hand. She smiled at whatever it was she felt, but she would say nothing of it then. Their meal was consumed in silence, silence not only at their table but throughout the common room. The handful of people eating there concentrated on their own plates and their own thoughts. The innkeeper, dusting tables with a corner of his apron, muttered to himself continually, but always too low to be heard. Nynaeve thought it would not be pleasant sleeping there. Even the air was heavy with fear. About the time they pushed their plates away, wiped clean with the last scraps of bread, one of the red-uniformed soldiers appeared in the doorway. He seemed resplendent to Nynaeve, in his peaked helmet and burnished breastplate, until he took a pose just inside the door, with a hand resting on the hilt of his sword and a stern look on his face, and used a finger to ease his too-tight collar. It made her think of Sen Bui trying to act the way a village councillor should. Lan spared him one glance and snorted,
"Militia. Useless."
The soldier looked over the room, letting his eyes come to rest on them. He hesitated, then took a deep breath before stomping over to demand, all in a rush, who they were, what their business was in Whitebridge, and how long they intended to stay.
"We are leaving as soon as I finish my ale," Lan said.
He took another slow swallow before looking up at the soldier.
"The light illumine good Queen Morgaze."
The red-uniformed man opened his mouth, then took a good look at Lan's eyes and stepped back. He caught himself immediately with a glance at Moiraine and her. She thought for a moment that he was going to do something foolish to keep from looking the coward in front of two women,
In her experience, men were often idiots that way. But too much had happened in Whitebridge. Too much uncertainty had escaped from the cellars of men's minds. The militiaman looked back at Lan and reconsidered once more. The warder's hard-planed face was expressionless, but there were those cold blue eyes. So cold. The militiaman settled on a brisk nod.
See that you do. Too many strangers around these days for the good of the Queen's peace.
Turning on his heel, he stomped out again, practicing his stern look on the way. None of the locals in the inn seemed to notice.
Where are we going? Nynaeve demanded of the warder. The mood in the room was such that she kept her voice low, but she made sure it was firm, too.
After the boat?
Lan looked at Moiraine, who shook her head slightly, and said, First I must find the one I can be sure of finding, and at present he is somewhere to the north of us. I do not think the other two went with the boat in any case. A small, satisfied smile touched her lips. They were in this room, perhaps a day ago, no more than two. Afraid, but they left alive. The trace would not have lasted without that strong emotion.
Which two?
Nynaeve leaned over the table intently.
Do you know?
The Aes Sedai shook her head, the slightest of motions, and Nynaeve settled back.
If they're only a day or two ahead, why don't we go after them first?
I know they were here, Moiraine said in that insufferably calm voice, but beyond that I cannot say if they went east or north or south. I trust they are smart enough to have gone east, toward Camelin, but I do not know, and lacking their tokens I will not know where they are until I am perhaps within half a mile. In 2 days they could have gone 20 miles or 40 in any direction if fear urged them, and they were certainly afraid when they left here.
But wisdom. However fearful they were, in whatever direction they ran, eventually they will remember Camelin, and it is there I will find them. But I will help the one I can find now, first.
Nynaeve opened her mouth again, but Lan cut her off in a soft voice.
They had reason to be afraid.
He looked around, then lowered his voice.
There was a halfman here.
He grimaced the way he had in the square.
I can still smell him everywhere.
Moiraine sighed.
I will keep hope until I know it is gone. I refuse to believe the Dark One can win so easily. I will find all three of them alive and well. I must believe it.
I want to find the boys, too, Nynaeve said. But what about Egwene? You never even mention her, and you ignore me when I ask. I thought you were going to take her off to—
She glanced at the other tables and lowered her voice.
To Tar Valon.
The Aes Sedai studied the tabletop for a moment before raising her eyes to Nynaeve's, and when she did, Nynaeve started back from a flash of anger that seemed almost to make Moiraine's eyes glow. Then her back stiffened, her own anger rising, but before she could say a word, the Aes Sedai spoke coldly.
I hope to find Egwene alive and well, too. I do not easily give up young women with that much ability once I have found them, but it will be as the wheel weaves.
Nynaeve felt a cold ball in the pit of her stomach.
Am I one of those young women you won't give up?
We'll see about that, Aes Sedai. The light burn you, we'll see about that.
The meal was finished in silence, and it was a silent three who rode through the gates and down the Camelin Road. Moiraine's eyes searched the horizon to the northeast. Behind them, the smoke-stained town of Whitebridge cowered.